Fuzzy?
Yes.
Bear left.
What?
Bear left.
Right frog.
What?
Never mind.
That's cute.
Hello and welcome back to Bear Left, Right Frog, a Muppets movie podcast. Hello, Steven. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Quinn. A little sad because we're at the end of our run.
I know.
At least for now. At least for now.
Yeah. At least until they make more Muppet movies, because Muppets are one of the eternal facts of life. But yeah, I'm trying to bring a lot of like fun enthusiasm to this episode for our finale.
Well, it's a fun, enthusiastic movie.
It is.
Or at least I think so. I don't know what you think yet. We have not talked about this.
Yeah. As previously stated on this show, this is the one Muppet movie that I was 100% sure I've never seen before. And so that was pretty fun to get to experience a brand new Muppet property.
And what are your overall thoughts?
Overall, I liked it. I thought it was really fun. I thought... Like, it is kind of sad just because I think that the previous one was so great and this one doesn't quite measure up. But, like, just judging it on its own, I think it's, like, a very fun, solid Muppet movie.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think it's as good as The Muppets, but it is a strong, strong contender. A lot better than a lot of the other movies we've talked about.
It is interesting because this is so directly set up as a sequel to The Muppets. Like, it starts literally as the previous movie ends, which is not common for the way The Muppets tend to do movies. In the past, there were more or less sort of independent entities that just happened to exist in the same universe and feature the same characters. But this one is very directly set up as an immediate sequel, which I think points to, like, you know, this was made in 2014, and I think that points more towards, like, the more common sequel culture that's come out in the 21st century.
It made me think about an older movie being Back to the Future, where, like, they overlap directly, except with a different actress for reasons. It's like, oh, the first scene in this movie is the last scene in the other movie. And this is the same way. Like, they are tied directly together, except that our two human characters in the previous movie just aren't around anymore. Like, I guess I just walked off before the sequel started.
Yeah, it was interesting the way they did that. And behind the scenes, so Jason Segel was part of the writing team for The Muppets, and he decided not to come back for this one. He basically said, like, the writers have my blessing, but I was really happy with what we did with The Muppets. I feel like my mission has been achieved, and I want to do other stuff now. And then he was initially, like, maybe going to do a cameo in this one, but that ended up not happening either. And so, like, he and Amy Adams are just, not only are they not in it at all, they are not mentioned, which is not that notable, except for the fact that one of the lead characters in this movie is still Walter, who is Jason Segel's character's brother, but Walter seems to have no memory of his brother.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, maybe I missed it, but I don't even think, like, in Walter's in bedroom on the train, like, I don't even think there's, like, a picture of his brother anywhere. It's really weird.
Yeah. I get that he wasn't in the movie. Sure, that's fine. But you would think that he was at least mentioned, or there's some kind of throwaway line about, like I got off the phone with... No, there's nothing. He does not exist.
Yeah, just something to tie it back. But yeah, I mean, I think other than that weirdness, I think that it does flow pretty nicely together, even though it was made, I guess... How many years apart were these two movies?
I think it was 3 years.
They picked it up pretty well.
Yeah. There's not a ton of, like, interesting meta information behind this movie, because it, you know, it was like, wow, the Muppets did really well, and we're going to do another one. Like, it was pretty direct. They decided that they were going to do this sort of, like, heist caper movie, which worked so well the first time.
There's even a jab later on at caper movies being bad, which I appreciated.
But that did allow them to do this fun stuff, because they decided to make it this whole international adventure. And so they were, a lot of the people who were working on the movie were inspired by, like, wanting to have sort of a fun satirical look at these different European countries, and also having this sort of, like, retro style of, like, these 60s and 70s movies. And so there is a lot of fun stuff that they got to do with production design, and, like, having the Muppets, like, have appear with the different languages and stuff, that I thought was very well done.
Yeah, it feels like there's sort of a retro nod to this movie, even though it's clearly taking place like in current time. I think that balance is struck pretty nicely.
Yeah, I think so too. This movie actually had somewhat of a disappointing box office run. It like underperformed when it opened, but it was still successful. It still made money. And it was generally critically well received. The general consensus was sounds like the same that we have, which is like not as good as the previous one, but like still pretty good.
I mean, everyone still had Muppets Wizard of Oz in their head, so the bar's low. Yeah, I wanted to know what you thought about the soundtrack of this film. You know, you were in our notes that on the soundtrack, there's little bits of dialogue, and having children who listen to these soundtracks, I've definitely noticed that where some of the older Muppet soundtracks don't have that. How do you feel about that?
I don't know why they did that. I think it's interesting. I like it in the way that I like that it feels very musical theater-y, and that's fun to me, but I don't like it as a listening experience because it just feels like it gets in the way of the songs.
Yeah. There's some of that on the soundtrack for The Muppets, too, we should point out, but I feel like this one, they did more of it.
Yeah. They have it before, like, every song, I think.
Yeah.
Which doesn't seem necessary, so I don't know what went into that.
Yeah, I don't know. Overall, though, I mean, we'll talk about the songs as we go. I like the music in this movie a lot. In fact, one of my all-time favorite Muppet songs is in this film.
Ooh, okay. I also got to say about the soundtrack that they put out, a really fun part of it is that there's a bunch of demos at the end of the soundtrack, and normally, demos really aren't that interesting, but these are really fun because they're just recordings that Brett McKenzie did, who wrote the music for this movie and the previous movie, The Muppets. And so he's doing all his own Muppet impersonations, and some of them are like longer songs, and so there's more content. And so those are actually worth listening to as well.
And it's not a Muppet movie without a whole bunch of cameos.
Oh my God, yeah.
A lot of them in here.
Well, talk about some of them as they happen, I assume, but just to shout out like a couple of my favorites or ones that I thought were notable. First of which is that Saoirse Ronan is like a cameo in this when they're in Ireland, but she like they don't even say her name. Like she just kind of appears on screen on the Muppets stage. And I realized this movie came out before Saoirse Ronan like really became famous. Like she had done some movies that had gotten a lot of attention, but this was like before Brooklyn, before Lady Bird, and they were just like, I don't know, here's this Irish actress.
Yeah, it's like a pre-cameo somehow. It's like, if you watch this movie later, you'll totally know who this is.
Yeah. Which is fairly uncommon for Muppet cameos for someone's star to be on their way up with this, but there we go. And also, the fact that Jemaine Clement just gets a full song, like, near the end of the movie, I thought was really cute because he is the other half of the group Flight of the Conchords with Brett McKenzie. And so I thought it was really fantastic. Fun that he was in this movie and they were just like, you get to do a full cover of a song.
Yeah. No, I really enjoyed that. I feel like he, you know, McKenzie's like working on the music. It calls his buddy up, hey, got a part for you. Come on.
Want to be in a Muppet movie, pal? Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I do. Thank you for calling. Josh Groban is locked away in a metal box, we'll find out later, which I really enjoyed. At one point, they open the box and smoke is coming out, or I guess maybe the steam from his breath, but it's pretty funny. You hear him singing in this big metal box.
Yeah, it's very fun. There's a lot of well-done cameos that are like, some of them you know, just like, here's a famous person doing something, but a lot of them were like clever in the way that they did them, which I appreciated.
I think the most Muppety cameo is Usher as a wedding usher, though. Like, I love it. It's so funny. And it's like, if you don't know who it is, then it's like just a guy playing a wedding usher. But I don't know. It's perfect. It feels like very Muppet humor there.
Yes. Just the way that he smiles and says, yes, I am the usher.
Yeah.
Well, as we said earlier, this movie starts at literally as the last movie ends. It's the end of the big number from the previous movie. We see the back of, air quotes, Jason Segel and Amy Adams. You never see their faces. And then it just pans away and the Muppets are just chatting about how they had so much fun doing that movie. And then they see that there's still a camera there.
I think Walter's the one who spots it. It's like, oh, I guess I guess they've ordered a sequel, which just is expressed in song, which is fantastic.
We're doing a sequel. That's what we do in Hollywood. And everybody knows that the sequel's never quite as good.
They just embark on this completely meta song called We're Doing a Sequel, which somewhat unfortunately does have a joke about how the sequels are never good as the original. And like, yeah. But I guess fair enough for you for recognizing it.
I was like, we know what we're doing. We know how it's going to go. Kermit is in a white tux with gold accents and a bow tie. It feels a little... Okay, I feel like this movie harkens back to Muppets Take Manhattan way more than any other Muppet movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. There's just something about it, including this outfit. It's kind of like the outfit they have in the show in the Manhattan movie. I don't know. But I like the white and gold.
I totally agree with that. And I think part of that is that there seem to be so many things in this movie and the way they set this movie up that hearken to like a very musical theater-y thing that was very much the theme of Muppets Take Manhattan. And even though that's not the explicit like content of this movie, it feels very the same way that movie did in the way that they do it.
Yeah, maybe I need like a white tux with gold accents next time we do a live relay show.
I think you should definitely do that.
I'm going to write that down. There's a joke in here that it kind of works still, but there's a line about waiting until Tom Hanks does Toy Story 4, which we have since gotten as a film.
Yeah, 5 years later, they finally made Toy Story 4. That was such a joke at the time.
Yeah, that sort of cracked me up. Of course, my kids are like, they made one. I still think the joke kind of works, even though that movie's come out. And Honeydew, of course, points out that this is the seventh sequel to the original movie. So if the sequel's never quite as good, they're real far down a hole by this point.
They're reaching to the bottom of the barrel there. No.
Mm-hmm. No, the bottom of the barrel is Muppets and Oz. This is nowhere near the bottom of that barrel.
We've bounced back from the barrel and we're on our way up.
Is that how barrels work? You bounce off the bottom of them?
I'm mixing my metaphors.
During this song and right afterwards, they're trying to work out what the plot of the movie should be, which is really good, like Muppet movie meta humor that we haven't had as much in the last few movies we've seen. But I feel like this movie kind of leans into it more than some of the others.
Mm-hmm.
We learned that the Muppets are real bad at coming up with movie ideas.
Yeah, they suggest a bunch, including Gonzo wants to have a love story with a chicken called Gonzo with the Wind. Fozzie just straight up pitches the previous movie, and then they point out to him that was the previous movie.
I like that one a lot.
Hey, it's a good concept. He's not wrong. And Piggy just suggests a movie about her getting married to Kermit and kissing him a lot.
And this is where we meet our main human character. He pops in with an idea.
Yeah, this is Ricky Gervais, playing a character named Dominic Badgie. It's spelled a bad guy, but he tells them it's French. but when he first appears, he just says, hey, what about the Muppets go on a world tour? And Kermit is initially like, I don't think that sounds like a very good idea. We kind of just got back together and we should probably rehearse or something. And then all the other Muppets are like, no. That sounds fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked Kermit's hesitancy here. And for a while in this movie, we sort of see stress between Dominic and Kermit as Kermit thinks that they're moving too quickly. And like, they get to their first venue, and like it's like a really small venue, and Kermit's not sure they're popular enough to sell out like a big theater. But Dominic is like, no, we're gonna go to the National Opera House and do this big thing, whatever city they're in. And like, there's tension here, and we see as the movie unfolds why that tension is there and what Dominic's really up to. But I kind of like the idea that Kermit feels threatened by someone else sort of coming into a leadership role. I'm not sure that that's an element we've really seen in a Muppet movie before. I feel like Kermit's power, if you will, has never really been questioned, or there's never really been like a full Muppet mutiny, I guess, except for the one on the ship in Treasure Island. But in real life Muppet Land, there hasn't really been like this pushback against Kermit's decision making. And in this movie, we get that. In fact, this movie really hinges on that. And I thought it was like a really fresh take to their dynamic.
Yeah. I also think it's interesting that I think that this movie really hinges on Kermit as a main character in the way that a lot of Muppet movies don't, where he's kind of, he's like, you know, a very important character, but it usually like the plot centers around someone else. Whereas there's a lot of stuff going on in this movie, but like Kermit and, as we'll soon see, his evil twin, are extremely central characters in a way that's not always true. And I think at the beginning, this was like a little rough, where I was like, oh, it's kind of sad to see him like be so, you know, conflicting with Dominic, but I feel like it was setting up a really good plot with the back and forth with him and Constantine.
This is where we meet Constantine. He is a frog in prison in a Russian gulag. He's the world's most wanted criminal, the world's most dangerous frog. Turns out he looks just like Kermit, but he has a big mole on his cheek above his lip and speaks with an accent, but looks just like Kermit. And we learn pretty quickly that he's serious. Like, he breaks out of this jail. Like, he attacks a bunch of guards and then blows up the jail behind him and then makes a phone call to somebody who he discovers Dominic. He blows up the phone. Like, anytime Constantine can blow something up, he's there for it.
Honestly, Gonzo's been doing that this whole time, so fair enough.
Yeah, it's just Gonzo, but more evil.
Yeah. A running joke throughout this entire movie is that even though Constantine and Kermit look functionally identical, except for the mole, there's this whole thing that basically, like, the mole makes Constantine apparently, like, unrecognizable. So if you have the mole, you're Constantine. If you don't have the mole, you're Kermit. And no one can ever figure out that these people look similar without that thing.
Yeah, it's great. There's a scene much later on where Fozzie, like, drops some guacamole or something on a picture of Constantine. He's like, oh, look, it's Kermit. And then he wipes it off and he's like, ah, it's Constantine. It's a very funny gag.
Yes. So meanwhile, as you said, the Muppets are going on this tour and they arrive in Germany and they're starting at this kind of janky old theater. And there's a sign that says Die Muppets, which is, I thought was really funny, is they don't really explain this joke. It means the Muppets in German, but if you're a child and you don't know that, they don't really tell you.
Yeah, we had that conversation in my house.
Oh no.
They're like, why does it say Die Muppets? And we had to explain that it says the Muppets in German. But yeah, that I think needed like a Muppet joke to offset a little bit.
Yeah, like it's very funny, but only if you actually know what that is.
Yeah, otherwise I was like, wait, what's happening in here?
Yeah, and Kermit rolls up and he's like, no, this place looks great. And I've like booked a bunch of sort of cabaret spots for us, like all sort of very low-key tour concept. And then Dominic steps in. He's like, what if instead we play the Berlin National Theater? And he's like, we cannot afford that. And he's like, who wants the Berlin National Theater? And everyone, all the Muppets are like, yay. And so Dominic is very quickly taking over the morale of the Muppets.
He is there to show Kermit to be too conservative in a way, or maybe too conservative for what the Muppets want. I think that the group, like, they're coming off the previous movie's antics, and they think that, you know, hey, we're riding this wave. Like, maybe there's even a little bit of, like, let's relive the glory days, I feel like. Like, yeah, let's go do the biggest show possible. And, I mean, like we said earlier, you know, Kermit's not okay with that. He's hesitant about moving to big venues and spending a bunch of money and doing all these things. And yeah, I think it works. But the other Muppets just like totally go for it and are very excited that Dominic, you know, is like, hey, let's do the National Theater. Let's go to like this beautiful place and, you know, we'll have a sellout crowd and it's going to be awesome. And they just buy into it.
The Muppets are fundamentally children. And we love them for that, but oh boy. This whole theme continues as well as they basically are asking more and more of Dominic over Kermit's opinions, where they're like, hey, we want to do, like, Gonzo wants to do the indoor running of the bulls. And Kermit's like, no, no, that's very dangerous. And then he turns around and asks Dominic what he thinks instead. which is obviously hurting Kermit's feelings a lot. And then Kermit is being all sad, and Miss Piggy rolls in and, like, has all this wedding planning stuff. She's like, I have 20 different swatches for the chairs for you to look at. And they have this whole fight in which Kermit's like, we're not engaged, which, understandable, still kind of rude. They've been together for like 100 years. He needs to get with it. But the consequence of this fight, they basically have a big blowout fight, and Dominic suggests that he go for a walk to clear his head, you know, perhaps down by that deserted canal in the fog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And Kermit just like takes the map and is gonna go for a walk, and you kind of get the sense that something is going to happen. Like, the fog is thick and it's sort of ominous. And then all of a sudden people start scattering, like this sort of not completely deserted, but like, there were like people around and there were some chickens and stuff, and everyone like goes back inside and they slam their shutters shut. And then we see this hooded figure run past. And I love the reveal because he is in front of Kermit. So we don't see Kermit. We just see the back of Constantine again in all black. And then we see like Kermit's arms flail out to the side as he's screaming. It's just a very funny shot.
It is. This also created a very popular meme, which is the shot in which Kermit turns around and looks at Constantine, and Constantine's wearing a hood. And so they look identical, except for one's like the evil version. And this was a very popular meme for a while. It's pretty funny. So I appreciate it for that too.
Yep. And he slaps a fake mole on Kermit. That means that Kermit now looks like Constantine, because that is the defining feature of these frogs, I guess.
Yeah, so rough break for Kermit, because apparently frogs don't carry identification, and no one requires identification of them. Because when people see him with that mole, they're like, oh my god, it's Constantine! And he is immediately arrested. Mm-hmm. There is no due process here.
No, none at all. And Constantine is watching this from around the corner, and he has a great line as he's covering up his own mole. And he says, it's not easy being mean. I love it.
That was very good.
I really love it. So back at the theater, Constantine is now standing in for Kermit. Constantine's voice doesn't match. It's deeper. He has some sort of Russian, Eastern European accent somewhere. Dominic just says he has a cold. I'm like, oh yeah, hey, I guess that works. And this is where the power shift that was going on before sort of completes. And Constantine basically says, look, Dominic is right. We should do what he says, you know. And Dominic, like, totally, like, steps into the role of the leader of the Muppets at this point.
Yeah, Kermit's friends are just not very observant and not very nice. They are so willing. They're so excited to do what they want that they do not question why Kermit is suddenly so weird. Except for Animal, who smells Constantine and then bites him, saying bad frog. Because Animal is always right. And so he is the only one that was so far picked up on the fact that this is not Kermit. But everyone else is just like, oh, there's Animal and his wacky hijinks.
We get another song at this point. Where once Dominic and Constantine are alone, we learn of their evil plan, because when bad guys have a plan, they have to explain it to each other so the audience understands.
I'm number one. You're number two. We're criminals at large, but I'm at larger than you. I'm number one. You're number two.
And the plan is they're going to go on tour, and they're going to eventually steal the crown jewels. But they got to do all this other stuff first. And we get a song about their relationship, because Constantine is, as we discussed earlier, the number one most wanted criminal in the world. But Dominic is number two, but not as Dominic, but as the lemur, because he has this calling card of this gold coin with a lemur on it. We also find out later that he has a lemur costume, which is quite the look, really.
It's very intimidating.
Very striking. But we get this song about being number one and number two.
Yeah. It is funny to watch a tiny frog puppet beat up Ricky Gervais, but this then goes into one of my favorite little things that this movie does, which is Constantine doesn't actually know how to be Kermit, because Kermit is the host of the Muppet Show, and that requires a lot of like public speaking and performing. And it turns out, even though Constantine is apparently this, you know, terrifying international criminal, he is scared of public speaking, I guess. Mm-hmm. So the second that he opens the door in the Muppet sign, he faints from seeing the crowd. He can't get the words out and falls onto the stage.
Yeah.
And has to be
flat on his back.
Oh my God, it's so funny. And the audience is just like,
Yeah. Yeah. And Scooter like comes out and they like pull Kermit off, and Scooter kind of takes over the MC role. Constantine, I guess, wakes up, comes downstairs to Dominic, who is timing hitting a wall with a sledgehammer with some crazy Harry explosions on stage. And there's this little like line of Constantine was like, oh, it's vertigo, not stage fright, if you may have been thinking that. he is insecure about this and wants to seem tough. That's vertigo. It happens to everybody.
Yeah, I'm afraid of nothing. But they do get to carry out their evil plan, which is sneaking into this museum by, you know, breaking down that wall. They cut a painting off the wall, and then they're going to cut more paintings to, you know, cover up their tracks of what exactly they were after. But then the alarm goes off. No idea why the first painting wasn't alarmed properly. But they run away. Dominic slash the lemur puts down his calling card coined thing. But they have succeeded in their mission, and they get away.
This is when we meet our investigators. We have Sam the Eagle, who is there from the CIA because their artwork was, I guess, on loan from America, so the CIA is involved. We also have Ty Burrell playing Jean-Pierre Napoleon, who is a French Interpol agent. And there's this great little series of jokes where they have larger and larger badges. And, like, finally Sam the Eagle gets one delivered by UPS. He, like, pulls the rope off, and it's like this badge is probably as tall as I am. It's great. And we also learn that there's some history here. So the lemur is well known, I guess, to Interpol, and they've been looking for him for a while.
Jean-Pierre is my favorite human character in this movie. They do so many bits, not only with Sam the Eagle and Jean-Pierre like having a rivalry with each other, but also this very much making fun of like Europeans. And like Jean-Pierre is like always on break. He's always eating. Like he just has like a very relaxed approach compared to Sam the Eagle. And then my favorite visual gag in the movie is at one point they cut to him and he is holding the world's tiniest coffee mug. And it made me laugh out loud.
It's like a thimble. It is so tiny. Yeah, I love this character so much. Everything in the delivery, every line is funny to me. It's so well done, and I think it was cast really well too. I just think it's really funny.
Meanwhile, we cut back to our main Muppet cast, and everyone's having a good time on the train. Apparently, the show got a good review. But then we see Dominic and Constantine checking out their painting, and they do that thing from National Treasure where they like put lemon juice on it and then heat it up so they can get this really, really involved map on the bag that apparently has like the instructions on how to steal the crown jewels, which of course requires a couple MacGuffins. Of a key and a locket that they need to find in various locations that are conveniently attached to theaters.
Yeah, do all European cities build their theaters and the museums that hold their greatest treasures literally touching each other?
That's what I choose to believe.
That's how the movie lays it out, at least. We get a little bit of update on Kermit here as well. This is also, I feel like plot-wise, this is the most complicated Muppet movie to date, where like there's the A plot and the B plot, and there's kind of a C plot with like the crime going on. There's a lot going on in this movie.
Yeah.
I feel like it's more of a modern movie, modern film, where a lot of the previous Muppet movies are very linear and it's like there's one plot and maybe there's a side adventure or two. But like, there's a lot to keep up with in this one.
Yeah, that's very true. I feel like the second half of the movie functions better than the first half because they've managed to like set everything up and like just have fun from there. Whereas I think the first half does suffer from like a lot of jumping back and forth and trying to set up plot lines before they can actually get into them.
Yeah.
But this is the last major thing they have to set up, which is Kermit gets delivered to the gulag. Great.
That's right. King of the gulag, it seems.
Yeah.
There's a crown made of sporks.
They make a joke about having to readjust the crown. It's been adjusted to human size since Constantine left, and they have to put it back into frog size.
Look, I've never been to a gulag, but I've seen movies where prison stuff happens. I feel like a sport crown is probably banned in the gulag. There's a lot of pointy ends on that thing.
I would have to assume so. This is a very interesting prison. I think we can fairly assume does not accurately represent any form of law enforcement.
Let alone a gulag. Gulag 388 is very special. Quickly, the prisoners turn on Kermit because he says thank you for the prison crown. Like, no, Constantine never says thank you. We get a brief shot. The Muppets are here from the previous movie.
Yeah.
So I guess they did something bad between 2011 and 2014. Now they're in jail in Russia. But we meet the warden, Nadia, played by Tina Fey. And I think like Ty Burrell, I think she's wonderfully cast. And I love her character because she is like really hardcore. But at the same time, as we come to find out, like she knows that it's Kermit and wants to keep him there, and it's sort of complex, but also sort of creepy. I don't know. I think there's a lot of depth to the warden character that maybe we wouldn't have expected otherwise.
Yeah, she has a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah,
but she gets her own she gets her own song to start out, singing "The Big House," and singing about the gulag and kind of how life works there.
It's the big house, the perfect getaway. Welcome into the big house. You'll never get away.
There's a good joke when she gets him into his cell and then she shouts "lights out." But then they put the lights out and she immediately trips and she's like, "You have to wait until I'm out of the hallway."
Yeah. She has built the gulag into being her sort of her own stage, right? And we find out that later there's this annual musical that's put on, and like she is performing in the gulag because that's what she loves. She loves, I guess, music theater and she loves the Muppets. But that joke's really funny. The lyrics in the Big House song are really, really funny. There's a lot of great lines in there. One of my favorites is like, "What the chef does to the food is criminal." Like, it's just there's lots of little puns and stuff in those lyrics that really make that song work.
Yeah, it's very clever. Now we come back to our Muppets, who still have no idea that Kermit isn't there and is, in fact, in a gulag. But that's fine. They're great friends. Constantine has apologized as Kermit to Piggy, but that when she comes back to like talk to him some more, he snaps at her because he's too used to being evil and not like a nice frog like Kermit, who still is a bad boyfriend, but like isn't that mean. But then Dominic's like, no, you're blowing your cover. So Constantine as Kermit sings an entire song about how he can give her what she wants, and it's this, you know, basically puppet seduction song. So that's fun and wholesome.
I can give you anything you want, give you anything you need. I'll make your dreams come true.
Yeah. He's in a white silk shirt. He's wearing a gold chain. He has a tattoo on his chest that I could not for the life of me work out what it was.
Yeah, I have no idea.
And it's not just Piggy. Like, he seduces all of them by saying, like, whatever, like, I can give you what you want. They ask something. He's like, yeah, who cares? Do what you want. I mean, and they just buy into it. And really only Walter seems to notice that this is weird. And Walter begins to have some suspicion that something is off, but doesn't have all the pieces yet. And so he's kind of left with his concerns for now.
The Muppets have 4 brain cells collectively, and currently Walter and Kermit have 2 each.
Mm-hmm.
We do see that Kermit has, like, this giant poster of Miss Piggy on his wall in prison, and I don't know where he got that.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's kind of weird. He's using it to dig out, you know, just like in Shawshank Redemption, he's going to tunnel through the wall. But Nadia's waiting for him behind the poster.
There's a lot of good bits with that, where every time he tries an escape plan that's, like, been featured in a major prison movie, she is always waiting for him, like, halfway through or at the end of it. And she's like, that's the second most common escape that people try, and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
But we get back to Madrid and the Muppets as they are there for their next big show. Constantine is now, like, sitting down to study, and he's watching all these old videos of Kermit and, like, trying to imitate him, but, like, getting some words wrong. This is very fun. I wish they had more of this. In this movie, I really enjoyed this, like, minor subplot of Constantine trying to figure out how to be a Muppet. But then when they start their performance, they sing the Muppet theme song in Spanish, which is so great.
It is great. It's got a little, the music number is a little bit different. It is nice. But it goes downhill pretty quickly after that, because Constantine has let them do whatever they want to do. And so Gonzo gets the indoor running of the bulls, and they're using that noise to cover up them bombing their way into the museum next door. And Piggy does the Macarena with flamingo singing. Like, it really goes off the rails in a big way.
Yeah, he almost kills Salma Hayek. It's just a rough time all around.
Mm-hmm.
The sort of cap of the show is that the Electric Mayhem does a song, but they end up doing what they call jam session, and it goes on 4 hours. So the crowd is completely asleep. But then when they end the song, the crowd jumps up to a standing ovation. So it's like, yeah. That's suspicious. And then Dominic turns the corner, mm-hmm. and he's like, look, a print review that's somehow already been printed. We got a great review. And it's like, very suspicious.
Yeah. Walter's like, hey, yeah, we can rehearse. And Dominic's like, no, let's go out and celebrate. Constantine slips here and calls them all comrades, but no one notices. I didn't even hear that. I've seen this movie several times. I only caught that this time. It's like really subtle, but we get a little true Constantine shining through. But during the show, they do commit their crimes. And so for this, they had to find, one of these items they need to get in to steal the crown jewels. And they were hidden in a bust somewhere in the museum. But turns out there's like hundreds of them. And so, of course, it's in the last one that they break. And so when the police come in, 37 hours later, because they have to drive in, and this is where that scene with the tiny coffee cup is. They have this map of Europe with all the major cities lit with a light. He's like, when the light blinks, there's a crime there, and that's where we go. And Sam the Eagle's like, yeah, we're using like 3D radar in America, dude. Like, what are you doing? But they eventually get there in the tiny car, and they can't figure out what's stolen because everything's smashed, but nothing seems to be missing.
Yeah. But then they notice what could be a break in the case, which is there's a sign for the Muppets there. And there was a Muppet performance in Berlin as well. So they're like, aha, we are investigators. We can figure out the link here. So they decide to interrogate all of the Muppets, which lends itself to an amazing song.
It's my favorite one in the film. I would say it's in like my top 3 Muppet songs.
I completely agree. It was so much fun, and it also is, like, back to this, like, extremely musical theater. This is just straight out of a stage musical.
My alibi is watertight. The audience saw me sing all night.
Monsieur, we know you did the crime.
I was on stage that whole time. Haskell sang Rainbow Connection.
Thank you, Kermit. No more questions.
Yeah, so they're questioning various Muppets. There's a section where the Piggy's going to come in. So Jean's going to play romantic cop, and there's a bunch of pig jokes. And then she tells him to jump into a lake, which is like a line that has been picked up in my household. You know, like someone's like bugging you, like tell him to go jump in a lake.
Amazing.
It's made its way into the Halkett household. But this This doesn't really get them any information. The investigators are split on whether or not they think they did it. But then by the end, they agree that the Muppets are too dumb to have done this. And they have this great line of like, we know who didn't do it. And they're like celebrating that. It's like, your lead is dead, but it's a song, so it's got to be fun. I don't know. I love this sequence. I love this song so much. If you haven't listened, I mean, it's fun even listening to it on the soundtrack because it's just so great. And some of the dialogue is mixed in that kind of stitches it together.
Mm-hmm. And their conclusion that the Muppets are too dumb to have pulled off a criminal enterprise is very funny.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, Constantine has gotten good enough at hiding that they don't even suspect him when he's right under their nose. So they get to continue.
You cover that mole up.
Yeah.
You know?
Never suspect a thing.
Yeah, they even question him, and he's like, yeah, my alibi's watertight. They saw me sing on stage all night.
We then go back to our real Kermit, and this is when he has all his various escape attempts that keep getting blocked by Tina Fey. No, and then at a certain point, he sees that she has a newspaper, and it has a picture with all the Muppets on it, with Dominic, and they're all happy and thriving. And he's like, oh my God, wow, those are all my friends, and they don't even seem to miss me at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then she says, like, hey, I'm putting together a talent show. I think that you should help and like music direct this talent show that I want to put on.
Right. It's not really a request because he sort of questions it. And then he gets introduced to the wall where she like licks his back and like sticks him to the metal wall. And they're suspended there like in the freezing cold, which I mean, that seems like a crime against humanity type thing. Like, maybe that should be outlawed by the United Nations or something. I don't know. It seems like torture in a way. I don't want to be hung on a wall.
Yeah, I would assume that's against the Geneva Convention or something like that. But yeah.
So Kermit's there. He gets pulled into this project with Nadia. And the investigators, meanwhile, are still on the case. And they notice that the Dublin venue that the Muppets are going to be at next is also connected to the National Bank there. And so they have to say, well, maybe there is something to this theory after all. Let's go and see what they're going to do. And they kind of become friends through all this, which is great. And it's around this time, like on this trip to Dublin, where Walter really starts to put the pieces together. So he spies Constantine like breaking boards, like dressed as a black belt. Meanwhile, the train has turned into like a casino. Like there's lots of people there, and there's card games, and there's music. It's a party, but no one agrees with Walter that Kermit is acting weird, except for Animal Again. Animal Again says bad frog, and so you know they're slowly putting the pieces together.
Very, very slowly. Back in the gulag, Kermit is trying to help out the singing of the prisoners, and they're not doing very well, and they keep fighting back against what Kermit is telling them to do or suggestions or anything. And he like has this whole flashback to when all of the Muppets disagreed with what he wanted to do, and he just like freaks out and is like, no, you will listen to me, we are gonna have auditions, like, and then they're like, thank you, good, this is what, yes, we wanted from you,
we will do what you say.
They respond to force.
They do. I guess they are looking for, you know, a strong authority figure in prison. Kermit the Frog is that authority figure, I guess. Not Nadia. So the Muppins are in Dublin, and Walter spots Dominic sneaking away. And so he follows him around, and turns out Dominic is paying off journalists. That's how they're getting the good reviews, and I guess good reviews in advance. And he's making them pay people to come to the shows and applaud. So, like earlier when the Electric Mayhem played for 22 hours and then the crowd was asleep and then woke up and stood cheering, says they were paid off. And Walter hears all this. Of course, being a Muppet, Walter just wants to know where he keeps all of his suitcases full of cash. He's like, where did the suitcases come from? He's like, you're missing the point, buddy. He's a bad guy. It's right there in the name.
Budgie. Walter then tries to tell Fozzie what's going on. And Fozzie is going through a whole experience of herself. This is when we have the, like, guacamole falling on the picture of Constantine. And Fozzie's like, oh, looks like Kermit. And then Walter comes in with the story. And then they look at the picture again. And they're like, oh my God, Constantine and Kermit switched places. Who could have ever predicted this?
Shocking.
A complete surprise. Yeah. And then they're like, okay, let's go talk to Constantine or Kermit and like see, because Fozzie's not so sure. And then they find like a bunch of bombs and all this stuff. And they then make a joke about comedy heists just to burn on the Great Muppet Caper, I guess.
Well, in that scene too, it's kind of like the fancy restaurant where the jewels get stolen in that movie. It kind of has a similar vibe.
Mm.
They realize what has happened. This is where we get a very upsetting look at Constantine because he has like these scary metal teeth sometimes that he just pops in that I don't think need to be in this movie. It's very upsetting.
He's like the dragon Toothless from How to Train Your Dragon, except for not cute and only terrifying, with his scary metal teeth are only there sometimes.
Or like, you know, the dude from the old James Bond movie.
Sure.
Yep, we'll just go with that.
So Animal also shows up here because, again, Animal is the only one who's known from the beginning and is able to save them from Constantine's terrifying teeth. But they run away. They have to run away and they are separated from the rest of the Muppets. And they're like, okay, you know who we need? We need Kermit.
Yeah, let's find Kermit. He's the only one who can set this right. Kermit obviously doesn't know they're coming. He is just knee deep in auditions for the musical. Nadia stands up and sings and is not very good. And so he's like, maybe it should be Prisoners Only, like trying to gently dissuade her from trying out. And this is where we learn that Nadia has a bit of a Kermit fetish. So she has this shrine. And there's a cutout picture of him, and she tells it that she will never let him go, and then, like, collapses on the floor kissing it. She's got a thing for the frog.
Yeah. The musical situation is very fun, though. They're doing a chorus line bit, and there's, like, a whole montage of them getting better and better, and also getting, like, more, like, elaborate costuming, where they start out in just their prison uniforms, and by the end they have, like, dance leggings and crop tops, and it's very fun, and I appreciated that a lot.
Dominic comes back to find Constantine knitting, which is how he deals with stress, which is just hilarious. There's in the bloopers for this film, Ricky Gervais could not get through opening the door to see Dominic knitting. Like, every time he opened the door, like, six times in the blooper reel, and just, like, kept breaking it, because it is a very funny scene, like, the world's most dangerous frog knits when he's stressed. And he shares Walter and Fozzie and Animal, they know what's going on, and they've escaped, and they've got to work out how to tell the others, right? They got to tell the Muppets that these three blood friends are no longer with them. And they do this, and, like, they don't... It doesn't really land. Like Ralph points out, they just did a movie about Walter joining the Muppets. And they're like, oh, I don't know why they would leave. Like, we're a family. And it's sort of left unresolved, but we do get two little cameos from some Muppet friends that one of them we've seen a lot over the last three or four or five movies, but isn't really in either of the modern ones, which is Rizzo the Rat. And he suggests that, yeah, spent all this time on Walter, maybe at the expense of other beloved characters. And he says, come on, Robin. And then Robin, who's Kermit's nephew, like, walks behind him. And I didn't even realize that we didn't really see Rizzo the Rat in the previous movie until I saw him in this one, and he complained that he wasn't in either movie.
Yeah, that bit was pretty good. This whole scene, like, I think you're right, it doesn't exactly land. I do think that this movie is much less about the Muppets as a family than a lot of the other movies are, because there's a lot of disparate things going on. And so the ultimate conclusion of the movie is about, you know, Muppets family togetherness, all that good stuff. But most of the movie is them not noticing that Kermit has been replaced with his evil twin. And so that's a rough one.
Yeah, it's a little rocky, I think, plot-wise. We then see kind of a bunch of stuff happen at once. Our heroes are walking across ice and then desert and then ice and then desert. And Fozzie makes a joke about traveling in circles. And then Walter looks up and there's a sign, like a neon sign, that says, "Gulag, this way."
I bet Nadia put that there.
Yeah, so you know where to go. Meanwhile, in Dublin in the show, Scooter is on stage with the Penguins, and it's, again, not going very well. And I guess off camera, Dominic and fake Kermit decided that we need to frame Fozzie in the next crime. Like, we need to wrap this up. And so they have a rubber chicken to frame him. And they blow this door open into the place next door to find the last piece of the puzzle, which is this locket, which is on a skeleton. They go and they steal it. And then Constantine really ups the ante with the plan, and they kind of move to what they call the next phase. And that includes marage between him and Miss Piggy.
Yep. Just finally. Really jumping for it. Yeah, he literally interrupts Miss Piggy in the middle of her performing to propose to her. And then she, of course, says yes. And then he announces to everyone, like, "Hey, tour's going to go on hold because we need to go get married at the most romantic location, the Tower of London," which is a little bit of a stretch, but, you know, the paid audience claps. And then at the crime scene, as intended, our investigators do find the rubber chicken and they're like, "Oh, my God, it's the bear. Fozzie is the lemur." And so they're supposedly on the trail of Fozzie the Bear now.
Renowned criminal, Fozzie the Bear. Of course, this is initially good news to Piggy, but then she sort of realizes that everything's kind of too easy. That's always been hard with Kermit, and this just feels like it feels too right. It feels too good. And so she's questioning that it's actually true, it's actually happening.
Yeah, Celine Dion shows up to sing with her. And previously this movie, she keeps talking about singing Celine Dion songs. So she's kind of like her fairy godmother figure appearing with her. So that was fun.
"So how can something so right feel so wrong tonight?"
But then at the Gulag, it is finally time for the show. And it's going well. You know, they're having great performances. Every one of the prisoners, by the way, is like somebody. Like, Tom Hiddleston has a bit as a prisoner performing here. It's this whole thing. But then our Walter, Fozzie, and Animal show up and are like, "Hey, Kermit." And Kermit just like casually goes outside. The security in this place is very confusing. But he finds out that, like, basically no one knew the difference between him and Constantine for a while, except for Animal. And they're like, "Yeah, no, that's on us."
Yeah, it's as bad as it sounds, I think, is what Walter says.
Yeah. But then he finds out that Piggy is being set up to marry Constantine. And that's what makes them be like, we can't have this. Like, I have to go stop this and save her.
Yeah. So they're going to have one last number called "Working in a Coal Mine." And during the song, the prisoners are digging through the stage in the dirt below, kind of how Constantine and Dominic have been doing things under stage with the sound covering it up. Same thing here. And then they're digging down. And then one by one, the prisoners jump down the hole until the song is over and the stage is empty. And then the curtains reopen. And Nadia's like, "No, Kermit!" You know, like, falls to her knees, yelling at the sky. and we see Kermit and friends escaping. We don't know what happened to the other prisoners. Like, we find out much later that Kermit led the largest mass breakout in Gulag history. So Kermit is responsible for, like, putting a lot of bad people back, like, into society. Like, maybe that wasn't great, Kermit.
They do not grapple with the implications of this.
Nope, not at all. Not at all. It's very glossed over. But they make it back to London just in time for the wedding, because that's how travel works across Europe, I guess. They sneak in as floral workers, and there is this great gag where there's a mirror in Constantine's room, and Fozzie breaks it. And so Kermit puts on a suit and makeup, covers the fake mole, and then he has to act like Constantine in the mirror so Constantine isn't tipped off to what's happening. And it is really funny, and it falls apart, though, when Kermit, like, grabs a different colored hat, but Constantine doesn't notice, because that's when Dominic comes in. So, like, they're saved by the skin of their teeth, but those shots of Constantine looking at Kermit where the mirror is supposed to be is really good.
Yeah, and they mention in their plans that they are talking about that they're going to kill Miss Piggy, which is rough. But so basically they learned that, like, she's in really big danger, and so obviously this needs to put them into motion. However, the cops end up catching Fozzie and Kermit, because they think that Fozzie's the lemur and that Kermit is Constantine. John Pierre, like, goes on vacation at this exact moment, because, you know, he's French, so that's what he does. And they get handcuffed inside of Jean-Pierre's tiny car.
Yeah, which is so tiny and so small, they're able to just, like, punch their feet through it and walk around like Fred Flintstone.
Yep. It's a toy car, basically.
It really is. And so they're able to escape. But just like every other time in this movie, while the wedding's going on, you know, it's cover for Constantine to go in and do the work. And he has a crew of Muppet babies, like old men Muppet babies, to help him.
They're horrible.
They're so creepy. And again, like I've mentioned this before, you've got to watch the bloopers for this film. Ricky Gervais broke every time coming around the door to, like, the room full of baby Muppets. And, like, I would too. Like, can you imagine? Just, they're so upsetting looking, but they're so funny. Like, just as an adult man coming around the door, he just loses his mind every time.
They're nowhere near as bad as, like, the Ghost of Christmas Past, but they're one of the worst Muppet puppets that I've seen.
Ghost of Christmas Past is horrific.
League of its own, we shall say.
So they're able to break in. And Dominic works his way through a laser maze and is able to steal the jewels because they have all the parts they need. While upstairs, we have the wedding going on. Constantine says, "I do," immediately. But Piggy hesitates. And there's a very subtle nod to Muppets Take Manhattan here, where in Muppets Take Manhattan, during the musical when they get married, when Kermit pauses, everyone leans forward in the pews, and they do it again in this film as Piggy hesitates. Like, I don't know. Muppets Take Manhattan is one of my favorites, so maybe I just, like, am zeroed in and when it's referenced, but I thought that was a nice throwback as well. But they're getting ready to get married, but then a magic trapdoor is just in the right place at the right time, as they often are.
Love those magical trapdoors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this ends up being this whole kerfluffle where Kermit gets swapped through with Constantine. So suddenly it's the actual real Kermit standing there talking to Miss Piggy, which is very confusing for everyone. And then they switch again. And then Constantine's like, "Pay no attention to what just happened. I'm very excited to marry you. Absolutely."
Yeah.
But then they're able to catch Constantine in a net.
Which is handy in any wedding situation, really. Like, if you get married without a net in the room, you're asking for trouble, is what I say.
That's what I've always heard.
Yeah, it's true. And Constantine has his metal teeth. I don't know where he keeps them, but he has those. So he chews through the net, and they land in front of Piggy, and they're fighting and arguing. And Piggy's like, wait, what is happening? And then she comes up with an ingenious way to figure out which is the real Kermit, because they're dressed alike, and they look alike, because moles are all you need to see. And Piggy asks each one of them to marry her, and Constantine agrees immediately. But Kermit hesitates and hems and haws, and that's how she knows that he's the one.
This is so funny. That honestly is worth, that the payoff is worth, like, all of the bits of them fighting about marriage earlier. Because she's so thrilled, and because she can identify, because she knows, like, how much cold feet he gets. And she's like, yeah, that's my man. But then Constantine's like, all right. And so he fully reveals himself, taking off the makeup on his mole. And then everyone's like, oh my God, it's Constantine, the world's most dangerous frog.
Yeah. And Constantine has like a real evil guy moment here in the front of the church. Like, he yells at the Muppets and calls them idiots for believing in him. And, you know, they're fools. And then he holds up a remote and turns out that there's a bomb. But earlier in the movie, one of the suggestions for a show was Dr. Honeydew being able to demo his magnetic bomb-proof suit.
His bomb magnet suit.
And Beaker is still in it. But it turns out that's a handy thing to have, because we learned that Piggy's ring is the bomb. I guess that's how they were going to kill her. And the bomb gets sucked to Beaker's suit, and then Beaker is shot through the roof of this antique English church, and then he explodes in the river.
Yeah, the priest is like, oh, that was only 800 years old.
Yeah.
Things are so old in England.
You're not going to get your safety deposit back from the rental people.
With all of this mayhem, though, Constantine grabs Miss Piggy, because he's like, oh, no, I'm going to get away with this. Like, so he grabs hers, like, insurance. And then he goes and meets up with Dominic, who is dressed up as a lemur in just sort of like his Party City style Halloween costume.
Look, people celebrate different ways. Who are we to judge that if after stealing the crown jewels, you want to get dressed up in a lemur suit?
That's his thing, I guess. And he announces he's double-crossing Constantine. And Constantine's like, you don't announce a double-cross before you double-cross. And then he presses a button to eject Dominic out of the helicopter.
Yeah, it's all really, really funny. And Dominic's now out of the chopper, but they're going to take off. Constantine's going to take off, and he has Piggy with him, you know, tied up. And they've got to stop it, and so they use the Muppet ladder, which, again, was an idea they had pitched for a show. Kermit was like, no, that never works. Last time we did it, Gonzo was in the hospital. This time, I guess Gonzo is allowed to be at the top of the ladder because his nose is what hooks the Muppet ladder to the helicopter, which is just a great, funny gag.
It's like that scene in Captain America: Civil War. It's exactly the same.
Yeah. But then... you know, Kermit's finally up on the helicopter, and Constantine pulls a gun on him, which seems out of place in a Muppet movie. Even though it was in the first one, like a gun with a fork on the end of it, I was like, oh, why is there a firearm here? That's not cool.
This really is a return to the classic Muppet movie formula, in that there is random violence that doesn't seem to be fitting with the rest of the tone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the fight in the barn in the first movie, right? It's like they all had guns, and then there's the machine that turns your brains to oatmeal.
Yeah. But
Piggy, like, gets free and beats Constantine up.
Perfect.
Which is great. Like, she, like, flings him around the interior of the helicopter. He, like, hits the glass, hits the wall, hits the seat, hits the glass. It's really funny.
He is fundamentally very small, so.
Yeah, and I feel like these frogs are very flexible. Somehow, like, very, you can just toss them around, I guess. They don't weigh very much. They're easy to bend. But Constantine is arrested, and the investigators are there. They have a tearful goodbye. They bond over mocking Dominic's outfit for being adorable. Dominic does not like that adjective because he's the lemur, you know. But he's still number two, so I guess adorable fits. But there's one last snag. It's not quite happily ever after yet.
Yeah, at this point, that whole breaking out of prison thing comes back. And basically, Nadia and all the guards show up and say, like, Kermit, you led the biggest breakout in Gulag history. You're going to get 30 to 50 years. And then, in a stunning example of definitely how laws work, Walter says, you know, if you want to arrest Kermit, you're going to have to arrest me, too. And then all the rest of the Muppets, I guess plagued with guilt for being such terrible friends, are all like, yeah, if he's going to the gulag, we're all going to the gulag. And then Nadia says, actually, Kermit can go free. You know, this is your family. Families belong together. I absolve you of your crimes. Okay.
I don't feel like that's in her power, but I don't know exactly how the Russian legal system works.
There seems to be a lot happening here that is not really how it's supposed to work. But I guess considering the last movie was resolved by giving a man a head injury, this is about par for the course.
Yeah, that's true. And Nadia turns to leave, and Kermit stops her and says, hey, look, you know, we're still on tour. Our next stop's going to be for one night only, the gulag. And we see them sing together again, also from Upper Stake, Manhattan. And they sing attached to the wall. Constantine is there leading a verse in Russian. Josh Groban is let out of his scary prisoner box to sing for a second before locked back up.
I wasn't paying enough attention to recognize his voice. I hadn't really thought about it before. So I genuinely was surprised when Josh Groban showed up. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, he was in a... What do you have to do in the gulag that you're locked inside a metal box?
Josh Groban knows what he did.
That's right. Bad, bad Josh. And then Kermit tees up Nadia solo. But right as she opens her mouth, we get the end. And then she yells Kermit again because she wanted a solo, but he ended the movie because the movie is meta.
A beautiful meta movie. It was very fun. I think that I think the first half is a bit clunky, but overall, it's a very solid entry into Muppets canon.
Yeah, it's definitely not perfect, but it's a lot better than some of the middle era Muppet movies. And I would love to see... I'd love to see the Muppets come back again. I mean, this was, you know, many years ago now, and I think the world is ready. And we've talked about this before, either on the show or offline. But you know, as other like historical works become, you know, into the public domain, like there's lots of stuff they could do there. I think these two movies prove that a modern Muppet movie can be written from scratch if you have the right team, and so. I'm hopeful that we see them on the big screen sooner rather than later.
Absolutely. And this does put us at the end of this series for now. I wanted to end this by sharing a really lovely story, which is that because of this show, in our very first episode, we talked about the original Muppet movie and how much we loved Kermit and his little cowboy hat and cowboy boots. And my brother listened to that, and for Christmas, he assembled for me a cowboy Kermit puppet. They don't sell these. He bought a Kermit puppet, and like I don't even know where he got the other stuff. Like it's some kind of doll, and he bought a cowboy hat and cowboy boots, and so now this is a thing that I own, and it is so sweet. I'll post a picture on Twitter of me and the Kermit doll, It's been so much fun to do the show with you, and it's brought joy in my life in all these different ways.
Yeah, I'm glad we did it. I have really enjoyed it, too. And if there's another Muppet movie in the future, I'd say we do this again.
Well, Steven, until we can come together again.
Again.
That's it for now.
Bye, y'all.